The following episode of K-Voice was recorded Halloween, October 31st, 2017. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
It's going to be only America first. America, America first. America first. America first.
Прозевали, что Россия избрала президента Соединенных Штатов.
Это такое,
что редко можно говорить в Соединенных Штатах. Вообще смешно. Экономика. По всем этим параметрам Соединенные Штаты не последние, по крайней мере, 2 десятилетия проседают. И это Россия избрала президента Соединенных Штатов.
The American dream is dead.
Happy Halloween, everybody. I'm Kelly. This is your Resistance Podcast, K-Voice of Resistance. If you guys hear a low bass behind me during this recording, the neighbors are having a Halloween party, and I don't have a studio. So here we go. Robert Mueller.
Dominating.
Monday indictment day was satisfying, wasn't it? It kind of went down like this. George Papadopoulos.
He's an oil and energy consultant. Excellent guy.
As a former campaign policy advisor to the Trump campaign, pleaded guilty to lying to federal investigators about his conversations with people linked to the Russian government about potential dirt on Hillary Clinton and Russian willingness to cooperate with the campaign. Also winning spaces in the indictment bingo is our esteemed president's former campaign manager, Paul J. Manafort Jr.
Paul Manafort has done an amazing job. He's here someplace. Where's Paul? Paul Manafort.
And his business partner, Rick Gates. Rumor has it, my hero, Bob Mueller III, is hoping to pressure Manafort into providing information about none other than Donald himself. Cue conservative panic. And the conservative machine has been in overdrive all weekend. From the RNC to Fox Quote News Unquote, in the mouths of every bootlicking Republican, dripping all over the Twitter accounts from the Trumpian sycophants and the bottom dwellers of Reddit, and loudest of all, on high from the king himself, our Russian anointed president.
Your real Russia story is uranium.
Turn the tables and lock her up. That's what I said.
And we believe in equal justice under the law.
The most sobering thing about this entire unbelievable scandal is if she had won, none of this would be coming out.
The Uranium One deal really smelled.
The only evidence that we've seen thus far on collusion is with the Clintons or the DNC.
And what you did was inexplicable, Hillary.
Tony Podesta, for Tony's
I
brother John.
Said it. lock her up.
Who in
well,
the
we should be focusing on the continued lies of the Clinton administration.
John
and Hillary Clinton and the DNC.
It does strike me that in the last few days, at least Fox News seems to think that's where I live in the White House. Because they spend a disproportionate amount of their time talking about impeaching me. So, look, if they want to make a trade, I'd be more than willing.
The rabid call for Hillary Clinton's arrest and even her execution.
This is equivalent to what the Rosenbergs did, and those people got the chair. Think about it. Giving away nuclear capability to our enemies.
What an asshole!
That was Sebastian Gorka,
the bottom feeder.
Who's not a real doctor, don't believe him when he says he is. The disinformation campaign and the conspiracy-driven lies will push back. These right-wingers, with their whataboutitis,
their look over there,
Tourette's, and their allergy to truth and integrity. Donald J. J-Man, if you will. I'm talking to you for a moment. I know you're not the brightest. I know demagoguing Hillary Clinton is just so fun for you, but we do not lock up our opponents. I know that's what they do in the fascistic countries you love so much. Oh, I know it's not fair, but this is America. If you hate it so much, please, please go to Russia. Or better yet, go to Saudi Arabia. You'll fit right in there. Okay, for my next trick.
Aggressive attempts to shift the narrative from the real Russiagate to a fake scandal about Russians buying a Canadian uranium company in 2010. And the specious claim that Hillary Clinton personally approved the deal when she was Secretary of State in exchange for a big donation to the Clinton Foundation. Now, it's a conspiracy theory straight out of the book Clinton Cash, written in 2015 by a Breitbart alumnus named Peter Schweitzer and commissioned by none other than Breitbart and Trump strategist Steve Bannon, through something called the Government Accountability Institute, ostensibly a foundation based in Florida, funded by none other than Robert Mercer.
I want every media personality, the news person, what have you, to watch, to listen to the estimable Joanne Reed, so they can learn how to dismantle fake news and conservative talking heads all at once.
Who got the money when the Canadian company was sold to the Russian company, the uranium one? Who received the money?
I presume the company, but look.
Yeah, okay, second question. Mm-hmm. Who approved the sale? Because when any sort of uranium or any company that sells sort of sensitive type products, and by the way, the uranium that's mined in these mines, right,
yep,
is for nuclear power. It's not for nuclear bombs, right? But when that happens, there is an organization called CFIS that approves it. Do you know what CFIS stands
yes,
for?
Yes, absolutely.
What does it stand for?
The woman she's taking apart here is Jen Kearns of the Washington Examiner, which, of course, is a right-wing website and weekly magazine.
Do you know what CFIS stands
yes,
for?
Yes, absolutely.
What does it stand for?
Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States.
How many people sit on that committee?
9 members.
How many have to approve a deal like this?
All nine,
nine
of them,
members.
I believe.
How many
absolutely
approved this deal?
9 of them.
Did Hillary Clinton sit personally on that deal?
No, but she
did
pushed
not
for it.
She, no, she
and
did
you know
not.
What?
No, hold on.
Here.
Okay, here's the thing. Clinton's vote would have been only 1 of 9, as the reviews are run by the Treasury Department and other cabinet secretaries get to weigh in. Even if CFIS had wanted to veto the transaction, they couldn't, according to Snopes. By law, the committee can't veto a transaction. Only the president can. So sure, the Secretary of State gets a vote, but as Steve Grunderman, a fellow at the Atlantic Council who dealt with CFIS reviews while serving in the Pentagon in the 90s, explains, quote, "The Secretary of State is one, and frankly not usually a very powerful member of the committee. You have to remember, with CFIS, the first letter stands for the committee," unquote. Not to mention, I guess that cabinet secretaries almost never deal with the committee themselves, instead delegating to underlings. For Clinton, that delegate was the Assistant Secretary of State for Economic and Business Affairs, Jose Fernandez, who said to Time magazine in 2015, and I quote, "Secretary Clinton never intervened with me on any CFIS matter," unquote. Two former State Department officials who served under Clinton told Newsweek that Clinton would have been notified of a CFIS decision only if there were a disagreement among members of the committee, which would push a final decision to the president anyway. The CFIS decision on the Uranium One deal was unanimous. All 9 representatives had to approve it. Anyhow, Joy explains all this better. Here she is.
Who is the person who donated to Hillary Clinton who is related to and had an investment in Uranium One? What is that person's name? Do you remember their name?
They are board members of Uranium One, donated up to $143 million.
Tom Huestra. And when did
Tom Huestra, Clinton Foundation.
Did he own any assets in Uranium One at the time that Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State?
You know, I don't know that, but
not.
here's what I'd like to know.
So hold on one second.
You should know, he sold them years before. Yep.
So what you're...
You hear that? Now, I'm not always a fan of the Chris Matthews style of interviewing, where you don't like the other person talk, but when the person has proved to be the kind of propaganda artist who has a case of whataboutitis and likes to spin talking points instead of answering questions, then the reporter needs to prevent this person from sucking all the air out of the room while the reporter lays out the facts.
Yeah.
So what you're talking about is a deal that nine members of CFIUS approved unanimously, none of whom was Hillary Clinton. You have a donor who separately gave Hillary Clinton donations at a time when she was not Secretary of State. The two things cross in the night. They have no relation to each other. The members of CFIUS have been very clear that Hillary Clinton had nothing to do with approving that deal. She would have had to strong arm eight other people in order to get them to unanimously approve the deal. And ultimately, the President of the United States would intervene if they saw any problem. The CFIUS people say now, if that deal came before them today, they would still approve it unanimously. There's actually nothing about the deal that's controversial. The only reason we're talking about it is because, per your even admission, which I think is very honest, the RNC would like us to be talking about this now.
That is the resistance in action. That is a journalist who is dedicated to the truth and who will give fake news no quarter. I love it. Pastor and blogger John Pavlovitz warns in his blog, Stuff That Needs to Be Said, quote, if enough time passes, an otherwise healthy person can start to get used to sickness. Twisted reality is acceptable. Little by little, they can gradually allow themselves to acclimate to the nightmare, to come to see it as normal. Either that, or they determine that they are actually out of their minds and they collapse inside. This is a reminder that this is not at all normal and that you are right to feel this disorientation. I need you to hear this, friend. You are okay. You are not alone and you are not crazy. You are also in good company, unquote. Remember, we're in the majority. Yes, it is true. The Republican Party controls all three branches of the government, as well as 32 state legislators and 33 governorships. But our friends at the Pew Research Center have found that 23% of Republican voters ages 18 to 29 have switched parties since 2015, against just 9% of Democratic voters in the same age range. And that was back in March. Who knows how many have left by now?
And millennials are the biggest voting bloc.
Gallup's daily reading of Herr Trump's job approval rating posted an all-time low of 33% on Sunday. That's right, 33%. Their voting bloc is only going to shrink from here. Pavlovitz goes on to say, quote, right now, there is a massive army of similarly walking wounded sharing this place with you, fellow exhausted souls who realize that none of this makes any sense. People concluding that for their health, they will need to create distance from the people they once allowed close proximity. There are millions of good people out there still looking to be the kind of people the world needs. Those committed to doing no harm, burdened to bring something decent where it is missing. There are many of us who see clearly. Unquote. I'm not the kind of person to listen to a pastor, but that guy's doing it right. I have to tell you, Sunday night wore me out. I spent the evening on the edge of my seat or pacing the floor as the Dodgers squared off against the Houston Astros in Game 5 of the World Series. The Dodgers lost not one, not two, but three leads to the Astros in one of the most insane World Series in history. In the end, after more than 400 pitches and more than 5 hours, the Astros won 13-12. I'm a Dodgers fan, but both teams were dynamite. Their next game is on Tuesday, and I will be in Dodger Stadium happily watching the Dodgers take down the Astros. Sports is a nice escape from the sports of politics. For me, while a loss does come with disappointment, it is not real-world disappointment. It is a pleasant way to detach and root for something that does not come with real-world life consequences. This is not me saying I disagree with politics being brought into sports. For example, the player protest. I absolutely support using the platform of a popular pastime to fight for social justice. But what I don't support is this. When Game 4 of the World Series, the Houston Astros, first baseman Yuli Gurriel had just hit a home run off the Dodgers pitcher Yu Darvish, a Japanese starting pitcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He returned to the Astros dugout, where he put his fingers to the sides of his face and lifted the corners of his eyes. A, you know, slanted eyes gesture, widely regarded as racist mockery of Asians. And then Gurriel also used the word, quote, chinito, unquote. Or Chinese boy, in reference to Darvish, who is of Iranian and Japanese descent. Major League Baseball, at least, acted swiftly, and Gurriel will be suspended without pay for 5 games at the start of the 2018 season, and will have to undergo sensitivity training. He won't miss any games in the World Series. Way to go, Major League Baseball! Well, the following game, which was the Game 5 that I just watched, it was in Houston. And Yuli Gurriel takes the field to the Stadium of Booms, even its fans rejecting racism in all its forms. Just kidding.
Yuli Gurriel!
Rather, he took the field to a chorus of cheers. And a good portion of Houston fans gave Yuli a standing ovation. In the video, which you can see on my Facebook page, K Voice of Resistance, you can see these MAGA Americans making America great again by spastically clapping and screaming on their feet as a racist player takes the field. Oh, I'm sure they're very proud. It was not all the fans. And that is definitely something. Darvish said that he saw Yuli Gurriel's gesture, but was not angry with him about it. Instead, he said he hopes that the moment can be used as a lesson and a step forward. Quote, personally, it doesn't really bother me, but I'm sure that the Astros have Asian fans, and there are a lot of Asian people all over the world. And to those people, from a humanistic perspective, and as a baseball organization, I thought the Astros' image might suffer as a result. Unquote. And yes, it will, and it has. We will be sure to give Yuli a proper welcome when he takes the field in Los Angeles on Halloween. This Week in Congress. This week, top officials from Facebook, Twitter, and Google will testify before congressional committees about the use of their networks by Russians to meddle in last year's presidential campaign. It'll be another big news day, to be sure. Facebook estimates that Russian-backed content reached 126 million Americans. That is one-third of all of us and about one-half of eligible voters. And Twitter. Two sources told NBC News that 36,746 Russian accounts sent 1.4 million election-related tweets, reaching 288 million users' accounts. Donald's margin of victory was 80,000 votes in 3 states. So people need to stop telling us that Russia had no effect on the outcome of the election. The House convenes on Tuesday with natural resources and legislative focus, introducing bills to give South Carolina representation in the Peanut Standards Board and establish a vegetation management pilot program to protect utility infrastructure from wildfire. Wednesday will feature votes on bills to allow for the active management of national forests, to reduce the risk of wildfire and disease, and to revoke the U.S. passports and visas belonging to members of terror groups. Thursday and Friday will be focused on legislation repeal of Obama's Independent Payment Advisory, IPAB.
Excuse me, what?
This is H.R. 849, Protecting Seniors' Access to Medicare Act, which is a very misleading name. This bill will repeal sections of the Affordable Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, that established the Independent Payment Advisory Board, IPAB, the group responsible for thinking up proposals to reduce Medicare spending. It will also restore the legal provisions that were repealed to create the IPAB. Medicare spending needs to be reined in one way or another. It is increasing every year at an unsustainable rate. The IPAB ensures that the necessary cuts happen, even if Congress, who can't get its crap together and can't agree on a bill that would reduce spending. Blah. Anyways, this will pass because, you know, Republican majority, blah, blah, blah. Oh, and good news. On Thursday, they will produce a yet-to-be-released bill to reauthorize the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP. Finally. It's ridiculous it has been this long. In the Senate, Monday, they confirmed to U.S. District Judge for Washington, D.C., a long-term member of the Federalist Society, Trevor McCadden, who represents their ideal for a judicial candidate. He is strongly conservative and young.
Not even 40.
He is so conservative, he canvasses for Republicans. Most notably, McFadden is a supporter of Donald himself, having donated $1,000 to his election efforts. And being a better for his transition team. He is also a hardliner against sanctuary cities. So, yay. They also had a cloture vote on the nomination of Joan Larson to be a U.S. Circuit Court judge for the Sixth Circuit. She is a Federalist Society member, of course, who clerked for the late conservative Justice Antonin Scalia. Other than that, she honestly doesn't seem to be that bad, which is a breath of fresh air. Also, there was a cloture vote on the nomination of Stefanos Bibas to be U.S. Circuit Court judge for the Third Circuit. Stefanos Bibas is a professor of law and criminology at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. He is a leading scholar of criminal procedure with expertise in criminal charging, plea bargaining, and sentencing. And honestly, this guy seems legit too. I know, it's crazy. I hesitate to say all this, but I really can't find any dirt on him. It's really odd. Conservative, I'm sure, but really, it seems like he's a normal choice that any conservative government would choose.
What?
And we have good news. Countable reports that a U.S. district court in Washington, D.C. has blocked the Trump administration's ban on transgender service members while the case makes its way through court. The judge ruled that, for now, the military's transgender policy will revert to the status quo of that it was before Donald's bigoted announcement. The previous policy allows transgender people to enlist in the military and serve openly. The difference here is the judge has not blocked the section of the presidential memorandum that banned military resources from funding sex reassignment surgical procedures. So, you know, you win some, you lose some, but it's something, right? Okay, we need to check in with Puerto Rico because, surprise, surprise, they're still having a humanitarian crisis. We have a follow-up to the story about the shady whitefish contract. You know, that came from Ryan Zinke, our interior secretary's hometown, and there was a connection to the big donor, to Donald and other Republicans. Well, Puerto Rican governor, Rosello, canceled the shady contract. So, woohoo!
That's a win.
And I was reading an article in Forbes, and Puerto Rico's crisis will soon be affecting us here on the mainland. It turns out that half of Puerto Rico's economy is devoted to manufacturing. One third of the island's GDP comes from making medical products. About 8% of medicines that Americans consume are produced in Puerto Rico. And 50% of device plants are there. They make everything from pacemakers to blood collection devices. And I guess the island is a growing biotech sector. Altogether, pharmaceutical plants employ 90,000 people, with more than 160,000 working in indirect supplier and support jobs. They are good, high-paying jobs that are crucial to supporting Puerto Rico's middle class. Unless these manufacturing facilities recover and stay in Puerto Rico, to put it bluntly, the island will be irreparably screwed. While most of the island is still without power, most of the pharmaceutical plants are operating, but at a substantially limited capacity. Most are operating on diesel-fueled generators that were never created to keep a large manufacturing plant operating indefinitely. Congress, or well, the GOP, could use its tax reform measure to help Puerto Rico here. Puerto Rico needs a change in tax policy to keep its active manufacturing sector alive. See, Puerto Rico is a U.S. territory, and its residents are U.S. citizens.
Which still surprises some people.
Yet our current dickish tax policy treats the island like a foreign country. That means U.S. companies operating in Puerto Rico face double taxation in Puerto Rico. Taxed once in Puerto Rico, and again bringing their earnings back to the mainland. Yet, foreign competitors operating in Puerto Rico pay taxes only once. I'm never a fan of giving companies a tax break, but honestly, this one seems like a load of BS. It seems to me that this is something the Republicans would be eager to do. All right, before I go, I want to finish with this. It is something I wanted to get to last show, but I ran out of time. The epidemic of opioid overdoses is claiming as many American lives as the terrorist attacks on 9/11 did every 3 weeks. Some time ago, writer-blogger Jenny Trout wrote this about the way our culture treats drug addicts. Quote, "Whatever motivates us to blame and dehumanize an addicted person is a cultural view that must be shifted. As long as the public perception of an addict is a selfish, immoral person who acts out of unprovoked malice, we will never break out of the cycle of shame and discouragement that prevents alcoholics and drug abusers from seeking treatment. Perhaps demystifying the experience of drug addiction is the key to creating a more productive national dialogue. We must retire forever our expectation that every addicted person will enter rehab and, like the movies, exit without risk of relapse due to a noble, purposeful change of heart that they had during treatment. We must stop embracing narratives that tell us addicts are dangerous reprobates whose recovery exists only to inspire others, and that any expression of caring feeling toward their predicament will ultimately enable their destructive behaviors. But to escape these misconceptions, we would have to listen without judgment to the voices of people we consider weak and selfish. We would have to have sympathy." Unquote. Thank you for listening. You can find my show on crabdiving.com, crabdiving.com, under the K Voice tab. Or download my show as a podcast. Catch Ryan Pfeiffer and Patrick Vile for all your progressive news 5 days a week on the Crab Diving Podcast. That is, if you like to laugh along with your news. You can also find my show on Citizen Truth at citizentruth.org. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice, and of course on Facebook at K Voice of Resistance. Okay, have a safe Halloween, take care of yourselves out there, and as always, resist.
And to make matters worse, it now seems very clear that this isn't an isolated incident. It's one of countless examples of how he has treated women his whole life. And I have to tell you that I listen to all of this, and I feel it so personally. And I'm sure that many of you do too, particularly the women. The shameful comments about our bodies, the disrespect of our ambitions and intellect, the belief that you can do anything you want to a woman. It is cruel. It's frightening. And the truth is, it hurts. It hurts. 2016, and we're hearing these exact same things every day on the campaign trail. We are drowning in it. Too many are treating this as just another day's headline. As if our outrage is overblown or unwarranted. As if this is normal, just politics as usual. This is not normal. This is not politics as usual. And I know it's a campaign, but this isn't about politics. It's about basic human decency. It's about right and wrong.
And we simply cannot endure this or expose our children to this any longer, not for another minute, and let alone for 4 years.